Grad school is a means to an end, and that end usually is a professional goal or direction. But some college students and graduate applicants don't know what they want to do professionally. And some graduate school applicants hate what they're doing professionally and go to school to escape their job. All they know is what they don't want to do. In this episode of Admission Straight Talk, I'm going to interview a career consultant who specializes in assisting students, graduates, and young professionals find meaningful careers. But before we turn to our special guest, I want to suggest that you explore the resources at Accepted if you think graduate school is in your future. Since this podcast isn't focused on any one educational or professional direction, just go to www.accepted.com or blog.accepted.com and choose a category that is most relevant to you. You will find there articles, webinars, special reports, and much, much more that could be of assistance to you. And I don't want to ignore at all our outstanding consulting and editing services that can help you both choose the right school for you as well as present yourself as a compelling candidate to that school. I also want to announce today a new feature on Admission Straight Talk, the ability to ask questions and, if possible, get answers right here on the show. Just go to the show notes at info.accepted.com/54, and you will see a widget that will allow you to leave an audio message in which you can ask your question. You can speak using your computer mic or your phone. You'll be asked to download an app to your phone. You can also send me questions via email at questions@accepted.com. If your question is chosen, I'll ask it or play the recording of your question and answer it on the show. Thank you in advance for sharing your questions. I think it will help everyone because there's a very good chance that if you have a question, others have it too. Now to today's guest. I'm so pleased that Grace Cutney of Sweet Careers has agreed to join me here today. She's a career technology specialist with Lawrence University and the founder and principal of Sweet Careers Consulting, her own company, where she provides resources including videos and informative practical blog posts on career development and job search techniques. She has 16-plus years experience in the field and has presented keynote presentations on using Twitter in job search, delivered other presentations on use of technology and developing resumes for the screens. She's been interviewed for Image at Work's Career Center Hot Topics and has been mentioned by media outlets including Mashable, Campus Career Counselor, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Entry Level Careers Examiner. Enough from me. Grace, thank you once again for joining me on Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Now, how did you come to focus, how did you personally come to focus on career advising and then to start Sweet Careers?
Oh, goodness. I really fell in love with the field of career development when I was an undergrad. I was volunteering. I grew up in Canada, and I'm from the West Coast originally. And when I was an undergrad at my university, I had the opportunity to volunteer for the Career Services Office at my university. And at that time, this was quite a few years ago now, but I had the opportunity to work with fellow students preparing resumes, cover letters, preparing for interviews. And there was just something about that that just really resonated with me. I had no idea at that point in time that career counselor or career advisor was even a career path. And it just really opened my eyes, and I fell in love with it, and I decided that I wanted to continue to work in higher education, pursue a career there, which eventually did bring me to the U.S. to work for Lawrence University's Career Services Office. If you fast forward to 2007, at that point, my oldest son was born, and mm-hmm. I wanted to be home full-time with him, but I didn't want to leave the field. I really wanted to stay connected. So I was home full-time with my son and working part-time at Lawrence, and I sort of started Sweet Careers really honestly as kind of just a laboratory for my own thoughts about career development, a really no intention of sharing it with the world at that time. And then 2008 came, and the economic bubble burst, and while things were definitely tight for my own family, gosh, I was just thankful to have a job and to have my home. And I looked around me, and everybody seemed to be losing their jobs and losing their homes, or even right in our own community. And I know nationally that was happening. And I wanted to help out in whatever way that I could. And as it turns out, messing around with technology and websites is kind of a hobby of mine. And I realized that if I could combine those two interests, my my love of career development, my interest in technology, I could actually provide web-based video reviews of resumes and cover letters as a service to people really all across the country and honestly now around the world. And that just was like, wow, I can actually help people. And so at that point in time, I started offering the free service for college students and recent grads, providing the free review services. And as you might imagine, that became really popular very, very quickly.
Yeah.
So
people like free, no question.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I really prided myself in offering a high quality service, even though it was free. I wanted it to be really high quality. But I started to get a lot of requests from people who weren't recent grads, saying, you know, and I kept hearing over and over, "Grace, you've got to offer fee-based services. I'm willing to pay for this. You know, you just need to make the option open." So now that's pretty much where Sweet Careers is, where we have the free services for recent grads, for current students. And then we also offer a few fee-based services for those who don't happen to meet the eligibility requirements for that.
Got it. By the way, as I was listening to you, I have to say that your story parallels the very early days of Accepted, which, by the way, go back about 20 years. Yes, yes. When I started Accepted, I wasn't actually working specifically in any kind of admissions capacity. I had been, years earlier, I had been an editor and tutor with UCLA's political science department, and I really liked it, but I didn't see it as a profession. And fast forward to the early 90s, I had 6 young children, ranging in age from 3 to 12. And I, too, did not want to have to, you know, have a 9-to-5 job. But we needed some more income. And this, starting first as an essay editing service, grounded very much in my experience at UCLA, and then expanding into application essay editing, and then, or actually focusing on application essay editing, and then ultimately admissions consulting. So it was quite, in terms of the initial motivation, there are certainly some similarities. In my case, I fell in love with the field. You came with the love. But there are certain parallels there.
Definitely. You know, and one of the things that really struck me, especially around that time, 2008, 2009.
It was a tough time.
Yeah, it was a really difficult time, and there were a lot of people who were coming to me saying, "Grace, in the 20-minute, 30-minute video that you produced for me to review my resume, you gave me more in that free video than I got for my $200+ paying to have my resume written." Because unfortunately, now, mind you, there are some wonderful resume writers out there,
True.
But there were a lot of people who wanted to fleece the flock, you know, when the bubble burst, and it just really bothered me, and I wanted to counteract that as much as possible with solid information, solid resources for job seekers, and that's really kind of what's kept me going.
That's great. Now, I'm a big believer in having a career goal before pursuing graduate education. Some applicants are blessed with a very clear direction, and many aren't so blessed. Many don't know. How can young adults or recent college grads determine the right career path for them? I realize that's an enormous topic and question, but a few tips, or perhaps a breaking down of the process the question into sub-questions, would really be helpful.
Gosh, that is a huge
question. It is a huge question. Yeah, I know. Books are written about it. Probably libraries filled.
Definitely. I absolutely agree. Having a career goal is definitely beneficial, and having structure just something that you're reaching towards is definitely helpful. But I also think that students, they need to be comfortable with the idea that people and jobs are dynamic. One of the challenges I think that students will bump into is that they have this image in their mind of what it is that they're trying to reach, if they do have a goal, that they're trying to reach. And then by the time they graduate from undergrad or by the time they graduate from graduate school, that goal has changed because the occupation was a moving target to begin with. And somehow they think to themselves, oh, no, I failed. And I don't think that that's necessarily the only way to look at that. If you walk in with, yes, a goal in mind, but expecting that there's going to be shifts and movements, not only in the job, but in yourself, mm-hmm. also, I think that's sort of the mindset that students need to have. Beyond that, being planful but flexible, I think, is also sort of the position that the student needs to take. That, yes, I'm going to be making plans, but I'm also willing to move and shift along the way. One of the ways I think that they can do this is to think about the experiences that they have, whether it's undergrad, graduate school, internships, even volunteering, part-time jobs, campus opportunities, you know, student leadership opportunities that they've had, as experiences that equip them with a variety of competencies. So thinking more of competencies that they gain and equip themselves with along the way, that can then be applied to a variety of different settings. And then from that perspective, it also becomes a little easier to spot maybe where they need to develop further competencies. So maybe they might be lacking in a particular area. So there's never this moment of, well, or less likely a moment of fear as you look back and go, oh goodness, I just completed this education and I'm not exactly where I thought I was going to be, or this mm-hmm. occupation has changed drastically. You're constantly looking back and looking at how can I apply the competencies that I have gained into whatever happens to be right in front of me, and then identifying gaps, if there are any gaps in your competencies, so that you can vault yourself to the next opportunity. I hope that makes sense, but I'm trying to be as succinct as possible here.
No, I realize, and I also realize I asked a very broad question. It seems like one of the metaphors I like to use is that you kind of want to be like a weather vane. You want to have the wind at the back. In other words, whatever you're seeking, there should be demand for. There should be, you know, it's important that there be jobs. I think it should be something that one enjoys, and I completely agree. You got to look at both things you've done for pay professionally and things you've done for fun or in community right. service or non-professionally, and think of those things that provide you the most satisfaction. At the same time, there's a big difference, but a weather vane is flexible and does change yeah. as the wind does. But that's a big difference between being a broken weather vane, in which case you just spin. Right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Right. So I think it's the spinning you want to avoid. The direction combined with flexibility, that's a good thing. And I think,
for sure.
and if I understand you, we're talking about the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the struggle, at least with some of the students that I've worked with, mind you, Lawrence University also has a conservatory of music.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think of some of those students in particular where they may have had a career goal in mind and then something changes, whether it's an injury perhaps, or something has changed within their field and they're no longer able to go in the direction that they expected they were going. And the students that I see who are the most successful and the most satisfied with their own career are usually those who don't look back and say, oh, gee, I made all these mistakes. You know, why did I do this? It's usually those who go, you know what? I've got a lot to offer. But they're very thoughtful and strategic about it. They identify, you know, what is it about my background that I can now apply in a completely different way? Mm-hmm. And they might be reorganizing some of those competencies and reapplying them in ways that are completely different. But they're taking control of what their future is going to be, and they're also taking control of their history.
Can you give an example? We don't have to mention names, but just a...
Sure. I worked with a student a few years back who was a piano performance mm-hmm. student who had injured his hand, I think, maybe in his third or fourth year. And that's pretty far along. But mind you, he'd been performing his entire life. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, goodness, what am I going to do now? How am I going to explain this to my family. I've been pursuing this career. And what he realized was that a lot of the skills that he had gained in all of those practices, there was just the rigor of his practice schedule and the determination that he had. He decided that he wanted to pursue a career in finance. Mind you, he had to go back and take more classes, so he was in school longer, and he was okay with that. But he really marketed himself he didn't hide the fact that he was a musician. He really sold it. And he said, mm-hmm. Listen, I am very, very comfortable identifying any flaws in my own work. I'm also really comfortable He had a very rigorous practice schedule, mm-hmm. and he didn't mind putting in that hard work. And
discipline?
He really...
You're looking for the word
he
discipline?
Was very disciplined. Oh, my goodness, yes, yes, that's the right word. He was so disciplined, and he took that experience, and rather than kind of, of course there was some sorrow, there was some mourning for a
sure.
while about this lost career, but he didn't just stay there. He looked forward, and he said, okay, what else am I interested in? What else is viable for me? What's within my grasp in the near future to be able to actually do? And he had taken some courses, I think, in accounting or economics. And he thought, I'm going to apply these experiences that I have in the past, and I'm going to apply them in this direction. And he was purposeful about it. He was thoughtful. And we worked together on those things. And he didn't give up. That was one of the biggest things. Yes, there was that moment of, oh, my goodness, what am I going to do now? But he picked himself up. He identified his history and what he could take with him and move forward. And then he applied it in a completely different way. And it was brilliant. He did an amazing job of doing that.
That's great. On an entirely different question, what is your opinion of the expected move away from unpaid internships in light of the recent lawsuits and the ruling by one judge that interns should be compensated for the work they do? Is this a good or bad development in your opinion?
Oh, that's a really great question. For the most part, I would say that this is probably helpful and can be a nice way to prevent some of the abuses that unfortunately we have seen mm-hmm. towards interns. On the other hand, my hesitation primarily would be if there was a complete move away from unpaid internships, which at this point there isn't. But mm-hmm. but if there was a complete move away and suddenly no unpaid internships were a possibility, I would worry that that would prevent smaller organizations, nonprofit organizations, from offering internships that are really, really valuable. I have seen some wonderful opportunities at smaller organizations where interns, because of the nature of the organization, because they're so small, the intern is given some really meaty opportunities. They get to learn a wide range of areas, and they're not being taken advantage of. They're learning, but they wouldn't have had that opportunity if that organization had to pay their interns because the organization was just too small to be able to pay. So I would be concerned about that. For the most part, I think that rules and regulations that are in place to protect interns are necessary, and I appreciate them. But I would also be a little bit hesitant if they went sort of too far. And a sort of similar note, I would also be a little bit concerned about international students who, for the most part, they can take on paid internships with their curricular practical training, CPT, and optional practical training, OPT. Mm-hmm. But in some cases, some international students, either they don't want to use those or they want to save it up, or they want to take on an unpaid internship at a smaller organization, again, so that they're exposed to a wider range of experiences. And if unpaid internships were no longer a possibility, that could really act as a detriment certainly to international students as well as to domestic.
Right. And you're actually kind of anticipating my next question, which is, I know you work a lot with international students and immigrants. What are the special challenges they face, and do you have any advice for them?
Oh, yes. Definitely international students do face gosh, a wide range of challenges, gosh, from getting used to a new location and culture to managing the expectations, to managing the expectations of their own family members sometimes, to advocating for themselves with employers that might not be very familiar with the sponsorship process. So, I have a little bit of advice. First of all, I'd say understand your visa. Know what your visa is and what your employment options are. No one is going to advocate for you as strongly or as powerfully as you can advocate for yourself. So that's the first thing. You need to know all of the employment implications. And when there are changes, unfortunately, sometimes there are changes that occur while you're in mid-class. So you need to be aware of what those changes are. Secondly, you need to learn how to translate your international experience so that it's meaningful to a potential employer. And when I say that, I don't mean generically saying, well, I have international experience, so that must be good. You need to know specifically how does your international experience benefit this specific employer for this specific position. And you need to be able to clearly articulate how that's a benefit to them. Because, again, there are a lot of people who are gaining international experience, domestic students who are going abroad and getting international experience as well. So you need to be able to very specifically speak to that as a benefit to the employer. I would also say that it's important to recognize perceived weaknesses. So, unfortunately, some potential employers may perceive something about you as an international student to be a weakness. And while I don't think it's beneficial...
Can you give an example?
Sure. The fact that your first language is not English, mm-hmm. that might be perceived as a weakness. The fact that, you perhaps lived in multiple countries over the course of your lifetime, that sometimes can be perceived as a weakness. The fact that you have only been in the United States for maybe, less than 4 years, that might be perceived as a weakness. So there are a number of different things that employers could perceive, sometimes correctly, sometimes incorrectly, characteristics or background that might be seen as weaknesses. And I don't think it's beneficial to get defensive about those things, but you do need to know how to defend those experiences. And if at all possible, look at ways to address the weakness and turn it around into a strength, if that's at all possible.
Mm-hmm. Really, it's a concern, to address a concern that the employer may have, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to think. I had worked with an international student not that long ago where this was kind of the issue. She came to me and was kind of concerned about the fact that she had been she'd been in the U.S. for a relatively short period of time, and she was kind of timid, which was totally fine. But as she started talking, and she was sort of apologetic, but she started talking about her experience and the different schools she had attended. She had attended two or three international schools as a high school student. I think her father may have been stationed in a few different places. And as I was hearing this, I was thinking, my goodness, so you're telling me you adapted not just once to the U.S., but three or four different times you adapted to a brand new culture. And she's, nodding at me. And I said, really? And how did you do that? And she talked about the experience. And so I started to work with her on becoming comfortable articulating what it was that she accomplished and how that would benefit. She was applying for an internship at the time. How that would benefit this internship site. And she started to really brighten up as we were talking about it. But this thing that she thought of as being a weakness in herself she suddenly started to realize, wow, this is actually good. This makes me stand out. This is something that I have that's different than other applicants. And I said, yeah, my goodness, that's absolutely true.
Right.
So it's
right.
These kinds of things that I think sometimes they can be a detriment, but oftentimes if you look at it, if you examine it, talk to some people about it, you may be surprised. It might actually be a strength that might make you an even stronger candidate for an opportunity.
It's true. It's true. And by the way, this goes for graduate admissions too, not just the job seeker. It's very similar in that regard.
Now,
social media is changing the way we communicate, and you are an expert in the use of social media and the web in job search. How can young professionals effectively use social media in a job search?
Oh, wow.
I'm asking all these big questions today.
You are. Social media is definitely an important tool in the job search today. And I think people do themselves a disservice if they try to ignore it, the fact that it's there. But it really is just one tool. What I would say first off is that students need to realize that there's a difference between simply using social media. That's not the same as strategically leveraging social media to bolster their career. So just because you have a Twitter account or a Tumblr, it doesn't mean that that's magically going to do anything for your career. So first of all, if you are going to be using social media as a job search tool, you need to have a consistent targeted brand across all platforms. And I'm not suggesting that you have all social media platforms, but whichever ones you decide to use, you need to have a consistent brand across all of those so there's no confusion when an employer searches for your name. If you are actively job seeking, then really in most cases you should be actively using LinkedIn. Of all the platforms that are out there at this present moment in time, LinkedIn is really the one that you shouldn't be ignoring. Now, you can certainly have other ones, but that one definitely is one that you should be using. And when I say that you should be actively using it, I don't just mean like having a profile on LinkedIn. What I mean here is joining relevant groups, participating in industry-related discussions that may be happening within those groups, sharing and commenting on content, sharing relevant content on LinkedIn and any other of the platforms as well. The idea with this is really to, when an employer Googles you, and we know that they do, they should see plenty of evidence of what it is that you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. If you say that you're passionate about legal issues, your name should be associated with the legal issues that you say you're passionate about. You know, if you're saying that you're passionate about sustainability, then you should make sure that there's no shortage of evidence that demonstrate or prove evidence for that passion, because that's really one of the ways that social media can help you, is that it can bolster your brand.
All right, great. What about, you say that there are positive steps, acts of commission that job seekers can do to leverage social media. But isn't it true that even if the job seeker is not attempting to leverage social media, that the job provider might be using social media to either publicize jobs or to check on applicants, to seek more information about applicants?
Yes. Oh, goodness, yes.
What are the dangers of social media for a job seeker? I think that is a danger, actually, isn't it?
Yes. I would say the immediate, the thing that comes to mind right away is, as far as a job seeker is concerned, is posting information that's unprofessional, that's not safe for work, and having your name associated with anything that's unprofessional in that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of the most obvious thing is avoiding that. But like I said earlier, you also don't want to be in a position where nobody can find you. You don't want to be sort of, if you're not online, do you exist? Unfortunately, seems to be the thinking these days. Also, students should be really cautious about using social media as a place to rant or rail against a current employer or previous employers. I know one of the beauties of social media is that it's so transparent, or it has a tendency to encourage transparency, to encourage authenticity. But at the same time, you really don't want to associate your name with this very negative language, because the employer who looks you up, the potential employer who looks you up and sees that, they're not going to associate that rant with the company necessarily. They're going to associate it with you.
Right.
So you really want to be cautious about that.
It reflects as much on the speaker as the one being spoken about.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And then finally here, I would say, unfortunately today, there's this increase in finding false or damaging information that's been posted about you without your consent. These revenge sites that have cropped up, or even just prank sites that have cropped up.
Wow.
And unfortunately, the law hasn't completely caught up with that. Here in Wisconsin, we have, I think in the last 6 months, there was a law passed that helps to prevent some of this from happening. But I would just encourage college students, anybody, any job seeker, to be aware of the laws in your area that can help you with this sort of thing. And of course, even from the front end, just try not to share inappropriate right. images. Unfortunately, as we've seen more recently, even people who aren't even sharing inappropriate images find themselves, photoshopped into inappropriate images and things like that. So, again, just being aware of the laws in your area to try to kind of help protect yourself.
Wow. I regularly see you posting job opportunities on your Twitter stream. Why?
Actually, this was sort of just a practical thing for myself. Throughout the course of the week, I would, always be working with clients, and they would tell me the jobs or the internships that they're looking for. And I always tell them, I'll keep my eyes open for any opportunities that sort of meet what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And I would try to send them back to the client. Over time, I would bump into other opportunities as well. Maybe it's not in the right geographic location, or maybe it's a full-time opportunity, but the student is looking for an internship, that sort of thing. And I would finally came to the realization, some of my followers might actually find these useful. So I just decided to pick a day. Right now it's Fridays,
uh-huh.
that I share opportunities. People will, throughout the course of the week, either my clients or others who will just send me emails or, tweet me or something. And say, hey, I'm looking for such and such an internship, let me know. And so I'll just post those on Friday. And it just, it's kind of gained some popularity.
Sure.
I actually post them all on Google+ and Facebook and Twitter. And, it's just kind of an easy way for me to keep track of the opportunities that I happen to bump into and kind of get to share it with the rest of the folks.
Is it specifically internships, or is it also, full-time entry-level positions, or is there any category?
No, it's typically entry-level jobs and internships.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
what I noticed.
It's usually weighted by what requests I got that week.
Uh-huh.
Last week, I think it was, I had two or three requests for sustainability types of opportunities, both full-time and internship. And then I had, it seemed like a lot, five or six people who were looking for writing, just
uh-huh.
broad writing, communication, social media, that sort of thing. So, yeah, there seems to be themes every week based on who I happen to be working with. Sometimes I'll be posting international opportunities because I happen to be working with some international clients. It's kind of what I find and what people happen to be asking for. And if I don't have a lot of requests, then I just sort of look around for things that I think look interesting for generally the people who follow me.
That's great. Now, what about in this very virtual world of ours, how about traditional networking? What role should it play in a 20-something's job search, a college applicant's job search? A few years ago, I was at an AGAC conference. AGAC is the professional organization for graduate admissions consultants. And Al Catrone from University of Michigan's Career Services, and he'd been there for a very experienced career management director. He was talking and he was complaining. He says, I keep telling these people, get it out of email. Get it out of email. You got to pick up the phone and talk to somebody. Go for coffee. Go for lunch. So where does human being to human being, I mean, here we are talking via, you know, some mechanism, but whatever, where does real human interaction, networking, whatever you want to call it, you know, what role does that play?
I absolutely agree. I think traditional networking is huge. It's so important, and it should never be replaced. And I want to say this, even though I love technology, I don't think it should ever be replaced by social networking. Mm-hmm. Social networking does have its place, and I think it should act as a supplement to traditional networking, maybe filling in some of the gaps. Mm-hmm. But that face-to-face time, or even at least by phone, is so important.
Yeah.
One of the things, though, that sort of the complaints that I hear from college students about traditional networking sometimes is that they feel kind of landlocked on their campuses. They're in class when opportunities to network are happening, and that's usually one of the complaints that I hear, especially if they're going to school in a physical geographic location that's different from where they want to work or they want to intern. So in terms of tips that I have, first of all, I would say start with someplace or with a safe population. By that I mean networking with alumni. Your institution's alumni base is often a really great place to start. These are folks who get your institution. They've gone through and they've applied that experience in the real world. So start there. Check with your career services office. Check with your alumni office and see if there's some ways that you can connect with those alumni face-to-face. Now, if, practically speaking, if you go to a school where most of your alumni are not physically located close to you, mm-hmm. then yeah, I would get it off of email and pick up the phone and see if you can schedule an informational interview by
right.
phone or even Skype. My goodness, that's
right.
certainly a possibility. And make it real so that this is an actual human being that you get to talk to. Of course, though, you have to remember, this is not asking for a job. I think this is one of the biggest problems with any kind of networking is jumping the gun. You know, students really anxious and ambitious, wanting to jump into these relationships and, can you hire me or do you have a job for me? And
yeah.
it doesn't work. This is developing a professional relationship, and relationships take time. They are not something that happen overnight. So that first informational interview is a really good way to start the relationship.
Right.
And then you can use social media to kind of supplement so you can stay connected after the fact.
You can follow
I would
the
also, right, exactly. Mm-hmm. I would also go to networking events that your career office may be supporting. Maybe they're putting on a networking event or any kinds of networking events within your city. You know, the Chamber of Commerce will sometimes put these things together. Depending on the size of your city, there may be a link up or a tweet up. They still do those.
Right.
Those are really great ways to connect. And if you're in a location and you're not wanting to work there, it's still a good idea to network locally, even if you're not planning on working there, because people are networked really broadly in other locations.
Right.
But I would also be really strategic about your breaks. I know this is kind of like, oh, this is sacred time. My break is sacred. But if you're going to be home, for example, and you want to intern at home and you're going to be, home for spring break or over the holidays, see if you can schedule a face-to-face information interview while you're back on break or wherever it is that you happen to be going. I have a number of students. I'm here in Wisconsin. I have a number of students who will schedule trips to New York, to Chicago, to wherever over their break, and try to meet up with as many people as they can during that time so that they can network. And they might preface that with maybe connecting on LinkedIn or something like that
sure.
before the actual face-to-face meeting so that they get the most out of that face-to-face time. But yeah, you really want to be strategic about those breaks if at all possible.
For sure. Grace, I think we're almost out of time. Where can listeners
okay.
learn more about your work in Sweet Careers Consulting?
Well, listeners can go to sweetcareersconsulting.com, and there's a lot of free resources right there on the page, articles, that we post as regularly as we can. You can also go to our services tab right up in the top left-hand corner that lists all the services that we provide. The free resume and cover letter review service is listed there. I think it's listed as free resume review, so they can definitely check that out.
You mentioned some videos. Is there a quick link for the videos that you were talking about earlier?
Oh, the videos that I do, they're actually mm-hmm. specialized videos. They're reviews that only the client can see.
Oh, all right.
So what happens is if you request a resume review, whether it's the free one or the fee-based one, which is really inexpensive, you send along your resume and your cover letter to me or whichever document you want me to review.
Mm-hmm.
And I produce a tailored video review of my comments and suggestions for making revision. I don't rewrite the document for you, but I will offer suggestions for perhaps rewording. I ask you to send along a job description of the position that you're interested in. And if you don't have a job target, I really encourage you to have one.
Of course.
But if not, I usually say, you know, send along a type of position that you're interested in. And I will teach the process of making sure that resume is tailored to that position through the video. And if you ask for a resume review, I'll have one for your resume and one for your cover letter, you know, whatever it is that you send along. And then I produce that video, and then I make that available to you. It's password protected so that nobody else sees your information.
Sure.
I mask your contact information, also just an extra layer of protection. I tend to be more cautious about my clients' privacy than they are. But yeah, that's the way they receive it. So then they can go back and watch those reviews over and over again as many times as they want to, and then they can send back, you know, revisions if they want to, and I'll review those as well. So, but yeah, that's kind of how those work.
Great. All right, we'll include a link in the show notes at info.exhibit.com/54 to www.sweetcareers.com. And I'll also include links to the resources I mentioned that accepted earlier. Listener, thank you, too, for joining Grace and me for our 54th episode. If you found this episode valuable, please share the good word. We have made it really easy for you to do so, actually changing how you can do so. Just go to info.exhibit.com/love. That's L-O-V-E. There is a pre-populated tweet there that you can send to your Twitter followers, or copy and paste it into Facebook or LinkedIn update or whatever is your social media pleasure. In any case, we really appreciate any help you provide in letting people know about Admission Straight Talk. Your assistance has been very effective. I also want to thank you as a loyal listener. Last month, Admission Straight Talk had more than 2,000 downloads for the first time. So thank you. And if you have any a question to share, please do so at info.accepted.com/54. Just find the SpeakPipe widget, and you can leave your question audibly there, or you can send an email to questions@accepted.com. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.